DJMCloud.com podcast, number 30. Recorded April 9th, 2012. DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Daniel J. McKeown. I have a book that I actually did release. I talked about it on a couple previous podcasts, but at that point I was still talking about making it, editing it, finishing it, and now it is available for download, so you can find it on my website, djmcloud.com, and the book is called Like Any Gangster, Selected Writings 2006 to 2011. So you could search for that on the website, and you can also find show notes for the podcast and subscribe through iTunes or RSS. At djmcloud.com. There have been some stories about the New Orleans Saints of the NFL, and the Saints won the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. There were many stories written about the city and its loyalty to the team and the popularity of players like Drew Brees. Now, there's a lot of questions around the team, specifically the defensive part of the team that won those Super Bowls. This is Greg Williams from the Saints, at the time the defensive coordinator, giving a speech that was recorded in the locker room.
Remember me? I got the first one. So lay that motherfucker out. We're going to dominate the line of scrimmage, and we're going to kill the fucking kid. Every single one of you. Before you get off the pile, affect the head. Early, affect the head. Continue, touch and hit the head. They're going to come in. They're going to be shocked with our contact. They're going to be shocked with our speed. They're going to be shocked with our strip. If you kick field goals, be the best defense in that stadium. Remember the walkways.
There have been a lot of different opinions about this and other things that Williams was recorded saying, but a lot of people have been very offended because in part of it he specifically spoke of players and the injuries that they were dealing with, and it sounds like he's talking about targeting those people in their vulnerable areas. And I think there's been some reactions. Some people have been very indignant, and some people have said, well, that's the way it is in football. And I don't know enough about football to really know what the most reasonable position is on that. You know, I've never played football. I do know some people who did. I did have a few friends who played football. My two brothers played football. They were pretty good athletes. They were pretty good at football in high school. But I don't know personally how the culture of football inside the locker room is like. From playing a little bit of soccer, just a little bit of junior high and a little bit in high school, I can't say that kind of talk happens in soccer games, but I know football is a really intense sport. So I think that actually goes to a very good question about football, about its future. And I will say that I am a fairly casual NFL fan, but I really do like college football a lot. I don't dislike the NFL. I just don't follow it that closely, and I watch a few games here and there, so it's not like I don't pay attention to it at all. It's just that a lot of people in this country, in the U.S. and I guess around the world, more and more are really intense fans, and they stay really informed. And while I might see some ESPN coverage, and I might you know watch a few games during the season on TV, I don't have plans on fall Sundays that revolve around the local team or my favorite team. The local team around here is the Browns, being near Cleveland. And I think it's cool if the Browns win more often. I mean, all things being equal, has basically found me because people around here are going to be happy. And that's cool. But I don't really feel personally very strongly about the Browns one way or the other. I do like college football a great deal, though, and college football has a very close and very interesting historic relationship with the NFL. Not maybe a direct relationship, but in terms of the players graduating from college or not graduating from college and leaving early and going to the NFL. There's a very long history, and the NFL is now probably the most popular sport in the country, and I think that it wasn't the most popular football level until probably the 1960s. College football was very popular as early as the 20s, and many teams like Michigan and Michigan State have already played 100 times, and Michigan State has a good 3-year streak going. So I think that that's trending in the right direction as far as I'm concerned. But I really like college football. I watch it. I watch Michigan State, but I also watch other teams. And I'm concerned that will people be playing football in 20 years? I don't know if the sport's going to still be around. I'm just saying, I don't know. Ralph Steadman, who drew the illustrations for many of Hunter S. Thompson's writings, has written a book detailing his adventures with the leading proponent of, quote, gonzo journalism, unquote. Certainly an important part of Thompson's success in creating a twisted version of the new journalism from the ashes of the 1960s counterculture. Stedman sometimes doubts himself and also frequently portrays Hunter as a cold, mean, and twisted, though often wounded and idealistic, icon. It could be remarked that the real Hunter S. Thompson may have lost sight of his original ideals, but seeing the time Stedman knew him as an evolution ignores the changes that now Hell's Angels Hardin Thompson had already undergone from the idealistic old-school aspiring novelist that he saw himself as in the early 1960s, an era perhaps best captured by the novel The Rum Diary. But so much for all that, as Thompson would often write in his pieces. Rob Stedman captures a somewhat dark, certainly tragic, and highly brilliant American genius as well as any observer might be thought capable of. Stedman starts from the beginning, when he met Thompson for an assignment in 1970 at the Kentucky Derby. The resulting article and drawings for Scanlon's magazine, as well as their subsequent work for the America's Cup, were the experiences that laid the groundwork for the words and drawings of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas in 1971, and are relayed in this book from Stedman's perspective. An enjoyable read, especially for those who have already read those pieces that Thompson's wrote all those years ago. You know, that is from my book on page 11. If you want to see that whole article and the rest of the book, you can go to djmcloud.com, search for Like Any Gangster, that's the name of the book, and you can download it for free. It actually is available for iBooks and as a PDF. The iBooks version is the iPad-specific kind of iBook. Now, I actually have been trying to keep track of any changes I might make to upcoming editions because, well, I think, you know, there are probably mistakes in any, well, almost any book. And I noticed that a period is missing somewhere. I think there's a letter off, there's a typo. I think it's an of or kind of mix up. And I've been keeping track, so I have a note about that. And then right around when I was finalizing the book, publishing it to iBooks and PDF, Apple released a new version. I was making my book with 1.0.1, and Apple released 1.1 of the iBooks creator, which is what I made the book with, and their iBooks author, their software that can be downloaded. And I think the new version, 1.1, supports the iPad 3 or the third iPad with the Retina display. And so there are a few small things those are what I might update in a new version. But I think overall, you know, right now it's just still in that first version, and that seems to work fine for now. Maybe it'll be updated. Now, the book that the article I was reading about, the article I was reading was published in 2007, and it's about The Joke's Over, which is a book by Ralph Stedman. The guy who did those illustrations, those Gonzo illustrations, the famous drawings that went with the Hunter S. Thompson articles on many famous occasions. And he's a Welsh cartoonist, very talented, very, very talented. But not only like as, you know, a visual artist, but writes an excellent book. That book is an excellent read. The book, I also review some other books about Hunter S. Thompson. But in terms of an outsider perspective, that's really well written. The Joke's Over is definitely an estimable work. I have ways to write as someone who likes to write, and of course, people will often emphasize the valuable opportunity afforded one who scribbles in a notebook, writes on a physical book that many people like to write in notebooks. And actually, I still do enjoy notebooks. Jessica got me a nice notebook as an anniversary present. It was a really cool notebook, and I write in it, and they take pictures of the stuff that I write, and the artwork that I think I'm going to use for this podcast is a drawing that I did in the notebook. I think there is still a place for that, but of course, the way to use a notebook is to take a quick picture with your iPhone and capture it that way. I like doing that and putting it on the photo roll or an Evernote or something like that. I have talked about iOS text editing apps before. Of course, I like to write text directly into an iPhone sometimes. Now, an app that I think is worth checking out is this app called Byword. Byword is pretty cool because it'll link to Dropbox or iCloud and allow you to edit text files. Also, Markdown, so you can do those files too. I mentioned iCloud earlier. I still need to move over to iCloud. Jessica just moved over. I'm using iDisk still. That's crazy because they're going to erase all that at the end of June. But I still use iDisk just for one thing, for syncing my OmniFocus apps. I just need to find a replacement. I guess I'll probably move to the OmniFocus syncing server. I have to move over to iCloud and start using those services. On iOS, I really like using GarageBand. Now, I have tried the new collaboration mode with Jessica just recently, and I'm very impressed. I really like what you can do with this app now. You can record at the same time, so you're both playing an instrument. There's one person who captures the recording both tracks on your one device, and I set up a session. Jessica joined it. I was on my iPhone 4S. Jessica was on her iPad 2. And we played some music together. And I should definitely put that music in as show music. It might be in the next podcast. I don't have it staged. It's really cool that, you know, you can use different instruments and play at the same time, and then, like I said, capture it in a song. Allows you to kind of go from recording to jamming with your iOS GarageBand apps. Now I'm using GarageBand for the desktop, GarageBand 6.0.5, on my iMac to record this podcast. I was actually going to use Audacity. Audacity is a free audio recording app that is available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. And a lot of people use it to record podcasts. Traditionally, it's a pretty good program. I'll tell you, I think I managed to... I was going to use it to record this podcast. I think I managed to create an issue with this iMac sound for a while. One of those kinds of things, like, you know, I guess that maybe people that are real gurus about desktop computer audio, in Apple's case, it's Core Audio, I think. Like, you know, people that really understand this stuff deeply may not have these issues, but I turned an indicator on Audacity that I really thought was only for one track, I think. I managed to basically turn the volume off, but at a level where it didn't really appear to be off at the system volume level, which, you know, obviously isn't very Mac-like, but Audacity is a cross-platform app. I don't know what was wrong. It was strange, and that definitely made me go right back to GarageBand, which... you know, it's not without issues, but it overall, you know, it's pretty solid, and it's mostly worked well for me. And Audacity, I actually have recorded of the 30 podcasts, this being the 30th, I know at least one or two have been recorded with Audacity, previous versions. But, you know, I'm really using GarageBand pretty steadily now. I guess that's just the one I use. When I come back from this break, I want to talk about another audio app. I have numerous times recommended the GarageBand for iOS app. Now, there used to be, I think there still are, numerous apps where people would get them because they were designed to simulate one instrument, you know, guitar, virtual guitar with strings that you could, you know, pluck and bend sort of with the touch interface, or the virtual piano apps. But GarageBand for iOS really gives you a range of different instruments that are very good. It gives you good keyboards. It gives you really cool virtual drums. And then it also gives you a virtual drum machine that it calls a smart, basically the smart drums are designed to be like a kind of a grid-based drum machine that you know, uses some new ideas, but it's very cool. But what if you want a synthesizer? Synthesizers, there's keyboards, but in terms of synthesizers, that's a strange area of instruments. And right now, if you want a cool synthesizer experience, you can find third-party apps. The one I've been using is Arctic Keys. It's a pretty cool app for iPhone that really gives you a virtual synthesizer. I've set up a few GitHub repositories lately, and these make it easy for you to download the code for that I'm putting up. And then for people that are into PHP, you could potentially fork the code right on GitHub, and it's GPL code, so that's, you know, something you could do. One of the repositories is for Grand Fork theme. That's my WordPress theme that has a column on the left, column on the right, and a column below for widgets, for, you know, widgetized sidebars. And it has a top menu, uses Futura font, or then Helvetica, and then sans serif. And it's the core, it's a theme that I'm using as a base for new themes. My current theme for djmcloud.com, which is called Green Dragon, is a child theme of Grand Fork. So I'm using it for my WordPress development as the core. And now I've put that theme on GitHub. So Grand Fork is there. And you can find my repositories on GitHub at github.com/PacificPelican. And I also have PacificPelican.us/CMS. The code for that is on GitHub. Now, PacificPelican.us/CMS is a simple file uploading, text file creation, and URL shortening app. It's written in PHP. You can upload it to your web server, and then you can do those things. It's a very hyper simple content management system. It doesn't even have functions like delete posts. It doesn't have rewritten permalinks. It's very basic, but it does work as a file uploading utility. You can use it as a very simplistic blogging system, and if you have FTP access to your server, you can always go and delete stuff that you upload that you don't want. And then another thing you can do is you can upload photos into the images directory, and they'll show up on the web interface. You don't have to upload it through that tool. It's meant to be very simple, and then say you could use it to upload files, link directly to the files, and then you could even eliminate the Pacific Pelican CMS code. It's meant to be very simple, and you can check that out too at PacificPelican.us/CMS, or you can find the repository for the code at github.com/PacificPelican. I also have been working on a theme for the front page of our Lovebergs Consulting site. I think I might use Grand Fork as the core for that. Well, I was talking about Hunter S. Thompson earlier, and another book that I review in my book is a book called The Kitchen Readings, which is a book about Hunter S. Thompson that revolves around his later days in Colorado. And here's an excerpt from it. This is on this is an excerpt from my book on page 8. My book you can find at danmckeown.info/book, or you can go to djmcloud.com and search for the book Like Any Gangster, Selected Writings 2006 to 2011. So here's the excerpt. So if Hunter S. Thompson only lived into his late 60s, this book reminds once again how weak and debilitated the celebrated journalist had become in the early 21st century. And again, reminds us of how utterly devastating George W. Bush's 2004 win was to Thompson. And much of the country. Cleverly uses a drawn-out discussion of the, quote, gonzo, unquote, funeral paid for by Johnny Depp to reflect on his passing and what it meant. It sort of draws a dark cloud over the book. And that's a excerpt that the authors were Michael Cleverly and Bob Broaddus. The book was written in 2008, I think, and that's when I reviewed it. Yeah. And it goes on, quote, one has to stay current at all costs, unquote, as the book mentions on page 181 in the context of Thompson's habit of always having the TV on. Does Hunter's constant desire for action help toward understanding the apparent suicide that ended his life in 2005? Unable to stay current with his famous friends, still recovering from back surgery, arguing with his wife, dealing with unwanted visitors to his country home, ruining the new political order, but how does that really add up to much more than the usual adversity that someone like Thompson always seemed to face or create? Friends in this book seem to recount their last visits as fairly normal. Regardless of all that, the stories in the book mainly center around Thompson's kitchen, which served as a kind of headquarters, and the stuff that happened in the community, like the time Thompson got his vehicle submerged in a flooded hayfield, or the time he accidentally shot his assistant Deborah while trying to scare a bear away from his garbage dumpster, or the time he needed a friend to hunt a bobcat out of his peacock cage. Much of it is very funny, and the book has a laid-back style and conspirational bent that make the kitchen readings, while not as brutal and brilliant a depiction of Thompson as Ralph Steadman's The Joke's Over, definitely worth checking out. Here are a few interesting passages by way of example. Quote, Hunter's short fuse was a thing of legend. Page 179. Over the years to come, as his motor skills began to deteriorate, I began to worry about him on two wheels, unquote. Hunter was mistrustful of the, quote, establishment, unquote. His rules were his own and often didn't quite dovetail with those of the people who ran things. So that's on page 69. That gives you an idea of some of the different books that came sort of at the periphery of the Hunter S. Thompson writings. These were two books that were actually, you know, written about him. Another review I did was a book by him of The Rum Diary. That movie was made into, pardon me, that book was made into a movie, and Johnny Depp is in it, and I actually haven't seen that movie yet. I'm not really in the habit of going to movies at the theater. I guess conceivably I could have made an exception for this one because I'm such a big Hunter S. Thompson fan. And I like Johnny Depp also, but in general I don't like movies, the movies that are coming out recently. I think a lot of them were terrible. And I think at its core, movie presentation in a theater is a form of brainwashing. And it affects the mind in profound ways that people underestimate. And I don't want to really expose myself to the kind of propaganda that Hollywood is currently putting out there. Well, the kitchen readings, the way the book talks about Hunter S. Thompson in his later years, it really seems like Hunter S. Thompson either fell into the pattern or modeled himself on great writers of the past. People like Victor Hugo in his day, or many of famous early 20th century writers, it would have literary salons where in their homes often, where they would entertain both political fellow travelers and also the people that they identified with or that looked up to them in the literary world. So I think that it definitely. It is cool. Johnny Depp goes around and talks about how Hunter S. Thompson should be considered one of the great writers of the 20th century, because that's an influential person. That's backing you if somebody like that's talking that way about you. And I think that's good. I think that, I think Johnny Depp might be the rare Hollywood actor that really understands art and writing at a high level. I have another iOS app that's actually a pretty cool, but I hesitate to recommend it. Now, I've talked about DJ Jim when he was on the podcast, episode number 17. He talked about it, and he likes it on his iPad. But the DJ app is very cool. DJ AY. That app allows you to play songs in your library on two different turntables, scratch them, run through effects. Now, there's another app. I think it's from the company that makes the iRig, the tool to connect your guitar into iPhone. I think that's what it does. They have an app called DJ Rig. Now, it's more or less a competing app to DJ, and I would recommend DJ over it if you want to get one, get that. But if you really are like to try different ones, DJ Rig is pretty cool. I have recorded some pretty entertaining mixes in it. It has BPM matching, but it crashes a lot. I gotta warn you, it crashes a lot. So you gotta consider that possible downside. Jessica and I went out to Cleveland Heights at the Grog Shop and saw EverythingIsTerrible.com live. They were showing their Doggy Woggies, Poochie Woochies show. And it was actually very entertaining. They're definitely worth checking out if you can see them live. Well, if you want to hear some of the music that I've played, especially, you know, some of the songs earlier, you can go to soundcloud.com/DJMCloud. That's the site where I release the songs by Niner, which is the band that Jessica and I have, and also Screambird, which is my trance side and electro side project. And I think if you want to see the homepages for those projects, you can go to the Niner webpage, blogs.sf3am.com/Niner, NEENER, that's how you spell it. And you know, the name, I don't know if we mentioned this in a previous podcast, the name is based on a sound the birds make. We have parakeets, and they, you know, they make a sound where when they want another bird to move, a lot of times Sparta, the big yellow one, she'll tell another bird to move, and she'll make that kind of sound, a sound that kind of sounds like Niner. So that's where we got it, and we had that name for a while. You know, we put some music out, so we just decided to use the name that we'd been, that we'd had for a while. If you want to check out the Screambird homepage, that's at screambird.djmcloud.com. And I also was going to mention that I have a Last.fm page where you can track the music I'm listening to. Because, you know, as someone who likes to play music, I really enjoy listening to a lot of music. And, you know, I guess some of the stuff that'll show up on there is just random stuff that I'm listening to and checking out. It could be pretty strange stuff, but then I'll go back to my favorites too. And, you know, I used to just use Last.fm to listen to like trance tag radio or stuff like that, but that it really, after a while, got really annoying. And then I started actually using it with the way I guess a lot of people use it, where they push a lot of the music they listen to. So I have like stuff I listen to on my iPhone, whether it's through Spotify or the music app, and then stuff they listen to on Spotify on the computers too. It goes to the it goes to my Last.fm page, which is last.fm/user/DanTheDinosaur. So you can find that. Find out what music that I'm listening to. And I also actually have a page where I kind of have a list of stuff that I'm reading. Actually, the stuff that I'm about to read, because once I archive it, it kind of goes off that page. But that's the readability page that I have on my, I actually have a link to it on my homepage, but the readability page is readability.com/PacificPelican/latest. So you can also read what I'm reading. This has been DJMCloud.com podcast number 30, recorded on April 9, 2012. Oh.